Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Fearscape Media Network, exploring the unknown, one podcast at a time.
Hi, listeners.
Listen to the Books and Boosts podcast with me, host Anna Timperley, and
Marlena Lear, as we crack open a bottle, or two,
or three, and dive into some interesting books, airing the first Wednesday of every month. Bye!
Hello, dear friends. I'm your head mister, Lord Stephen Gearhart.
And I am your co-mister, the man with no name, Lance Wayne.
And together we are the
Misters of the...
Let's try it again. The Misters of the Lance!
The Misters of the Dark!
Don't shut up! Ugh, whatever. Join us wherever you stream your favorite podcasts, or go to mistersofthedark.com, where we'll be discussing all things horror, from films and books to everything in betweensies. We also have the occasional victim. I mean, guest.
Only on the Fearscape Media Network.
Shut up, Lance! I always get the last laugh. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another awesome episode of The Convergence Enigma, here with Josh and Stefan. I am Stefan, your host for the evening, and I am joined, as always, by the professional man himself, Mr. Josh Rutledge. What up, dog?
I'm doing fantastic. Great to be professional and not gullible, like I was last week.
Hey, a lot changes, man. A lot changes. We got a really cool episode tonight, Josh. We have no guests. It's been a hot minute. So tonight we're actually going to get into one of our convergence enigmas that we've been researching and studying, and it's one we've talked about a number of times, but we're going to actually share the research and info that we found on this one. We're going to be talking about the convergence enigma around the Enfield haunting. So I'm really excited about that. If you guys want to go back and you're interested in really what the Enfield haunting is, you can go back to our episode, I believe, of Fearscape. That was the Enfield haunting. Go back. I couldn't tell you which episode number it is, but go back, listen to that first, or just watch The Conjuring 2, and then come back. We'll be here waiting for you. Hi, welcome back.
Welcome back, yeah. I hope you enjoyed that.
Hope you enjoyed that. All of our British listeners getting a little bit of a topic based in England there. So, but yeah, we're going to be talking about some convergences that took place in England and around those regions that was more than just the Enfield haunting. So, Josh, I'm going to hand the reins over to you and get things cracking. What else happened, man?
Yeah, so, you know, I want to kind of set up the stage for what I did and kind of the starting the research of this and looking into things. And so, you know, what period of time would you say constitutes a convergence?
I would say a year.
Okay, so what I did is I went back to... So the
or I would say if the main part of the convergence lasted 3 years, I would say 3 years, right?
Yeah.
So because we tend to find one major event,
right,
and work around that event. So
yeah. So
but a year around a single event.
So like what I looked at it as is the Enfield haunting happened in August of 1977.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back and looked at stuff that started happening in January. Pulling it forward into August and then past August and into, you know, November and December. I think that, you know, in other stuff, like you said, if it extends well beyond, you know, 3 years out or whatever, you know, worth looking into some detail. But I actually found some really interesting things.
Yeah, I mean, we look at anything. We look at cryptid sightings. Yeah. We look at UFO sightings, other hauntings, occult works, right, all kinds of things.
The whole premise here, right, is that somehow all of these things are related, right? They're mm-hmm. all converging in a certain area. So,
I mean, what did Dan Aykroyd say in Ghostbusters? I was witness to a mass fungus migration or something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, who knows, right? So. yeah. So anyways, starting out then in January 1977, mm-hmm. Again, for everybody who's listening, this is in the England, we'll call it the UK.
UK, yeah.
Because it includes Wales, it includes England, some stuff in Ireland. I didn't find a whole lot in the Scottish Isles, and so I didn't really go that far. I kind of kept it into that.
I mean, you just look at any Nessie sighting, I'm sure.
Yeah, true. True. So anyway, so starting in January 14th, 1977 is the earliest of that year that I could find. And this is the Peterson Farmhouse, which is on a coast, kind of like, as it relates to the island, it's kind of like on a northern part of the coast, mm-hmm. kind of north of the Wales area. And the husband was awakened late at night, went out. To the coastline, like his house sits on a cliff, right?
Yeah.
He looks down the cliff and sees Navy and Marines on the coast building a ramp into the water.
Into the water. Not out of the water, yep. But into the water.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, what got his attention to go look at it is he sees this bright light hanging off of the cliff. Now, I originally excluded this from my findings because if there are Navy and Marines working on the beach line below, most likely that bright light was a flare.
Right.
So they could see at night while they're working. And it is the 70s. It's very possible they were just doing standard maneuvers, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, there's a lot of talk around potentially there being some sort of, you know, undersea base kind of off the coast of England.
Yeah.
For a lot of craft and things, so it would be interesting. So, you know, yeah.
Yeah, very, very interesting.
So, and we're going to jump forward about 3 weeks to February 4th.
So, I want to go, what do you think they were building a ramp into the ocean for? You think just for an underwater base or possibly like some sort of submersible?
I mean, you know, if we go under the assumption that they might have been just doing kind of normal standard military procedures,
or was a sweet water slide.
I mean, it could have been, you know, but they had to build something to launch a boat,
mm-hmm.
to do, you know, to, you know, be able to accept a dinghy.
that's what she said.
I included that for your benefit.
You're welcome.
But you know, I mean, that's of course normal military procedures. If you look at it from, you know, the government knows and is involved and, you know, who knows? I mean, it could have been that they were getting ready to launch a boat full of female sacrifices. Who knows?
I know. Makes me wonder how far that area is from Rendlesham. Be interesting to look at.
It's on the other side.
Oh, other side of the continent?
Yep.
Or well, not continent, country.
Continent.
Sorry.
That's okay. They give you one pass. So you good? We're going to move on for...
Go ahead, okay. Yeah.
So February 4th, it's about 3 weeks later. At Broadhaven School, which is also in Wales, it's interesting too that, and I'll highlight this, a lot of the things that I found kind of go back to whales. You know, I'll draw some correlation here in a little bit. So,
I mean, that's all King Arthur stuff, man. That's what I'm saying.
So a UFO landing.
Yeah. So the one thing I was well aware way ahead of time was the UFO flap that took place during this year.
Well, so this is a landing at a school where 14 students saw a craft land and a humanoid figure get out.
Where's this documentary, Ariel, people?
Yeah, really. I mean, this is by far of the same magnitude as the one that, you know, the Ariel film covers. So, yeah, it's also on the same day in Basford, Staffordshire, England. An automobile club patrolman sighted a luminous orange object at some distance from his car. His two-way radio had heavy static. While the object was in view, there was simultaneously radio interference at the Stafford police headquarters.
Wow.
So this is in far as time sequence, because this happened at 2:25 in the morning and the school stand, you know, that was during school. It's actually, these are reversed a little bit, but yeah. So in relation to where this is on a map, so they're almost in line with each other on a map. And so of course, England, Staffordshire being kind of over in this area, and I'll try to like put a map up when I do this for the YouTube folks. I'll do a Google Earth or something, but yeah, I mean, it's, they're pretty much in line with each other on a map. So he saw it fly over at 2:25 in the morning, and then later that day, 14 students saw the craft.
Man, I would love to find an actual like microfiche news story on the landing to see.
Well, that there are news. I got, when in my research, I found newspaper articles where they did actually do a story about the landing and what the students saw, and they drew pictures of what they saw. And yeah, I mean, it's an amazing case for what I found. I mean, it's worth a dive into on its own.
Yeah, it absolutely sounds that way.
So fast forwarding 3 days. February 7th, 1977.
February is a hot month, man.
Yep. Newcastle. It's actually called Newcastle under Lyme.
It's under limestone, yep. Man.
England, 12:30 p.m. School students from a school saw a gray, flattened, cigar-shaped object moving slowly through the sky, surrounded by a vapor or mist. It changed color to orange, then to green, and then flew off toward the east to southeast.
Swamp gas, man.
The sighting lasted 10 minutes.
Dang, 10 minutes is a long time in UFO sightings.
Yep. I mean, that's more than enough time to really get a good picture of what you're seeing, right? So, yeah, February 17th, so 10 days later, in Pembrokeshire, Wales. During the day, a teacher and two canteen workers at Broadhaven School. So this is the second event at the school.
So this is the same school?
Same school. Second event at the school. Watched a silvery yellow cigar-shaped object glide over a field, emitting a loud humming sound. Before it left the area, a human-like figure was seen briefly to step out of the object and then go back inside.
It was injured cold, man.
I mean, you know, what is this? This is 11 years to the date.
That's funny. I imagine the humming sounded a little something like this. Because all musicals take place in England. All good ones.
I'm going to get slapped for not knowing the reference.
No, you're not.
Okay. March 7th now. We're moving on to March 1977. Winchester, Hampshire, England, 9 p.m. Mrs. Jane Bowles, any relation? I don't know. was driving with a friend, Miss Ann Strickland, along a country road when their car stopped and a brilliant glow, like a white sun, lit up the area around them. An oval object was observed that was luminous and making a humming sound. A man emerged from the UFO, one similar in appearance to the one involved in Mrs. Bowles' earlier close encounter, which I could not find.
God.
I could not find anything related to that. He was human-like and long hair, a beard, and pink eyes. He approached, holding out his hands, and touched Mrs. Bowles. His hands were warm to the touch, like a human's. The man looked...
So injured warm.
Yeah, injured...
You're welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. I'm here all night.
Injured hot would be found at Chippendales.
Gross. He just smiles the whole time.
He just stands there and smiles.
Yeah, just stands there and smiles. But he's still gyrating.
He didn't take his coveralls off.
No.
Just leaves them.
He doesn't need to.
Anyways, and then the man looked at Mrs. Strickland and then spoke in an unknown language. He gave something to Mrs. Bowles, which she would not divulge.
Ugh.
And then he returned to the UFO, which ascended into the sky with a hum and a high-pitched noise. The women returned to Winchester. and like if Michael Schrat gets somebody to do animations for this one, he needs to get you to do.
Yeah, I can do all the music background. You're good.
The women returned to Winchester, and Mrs. Bowles observed that her hands were red and swollen. She had to remove her wedding ring, and she found the skin underneath raw.
Oh, I wonder if that was from the gift that she was given, like if it was radioactive.
He touched her hands.
So, oh, that too, yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, who knows? I mean,
like, she just gave her some cobalt uranium, you know? Right. Here you go. Right. Here's some uranium.
I mean, we were interested in it a lot in 1977.
Yeah.
Again, March 9th, so 2 days later, in Nelson, North Lincolnshire, UK, at 3:10 a.m., a cigar-shaped metallic object appeared in the sky, so the two witnesses stopped their car for a better look. The UFO had lights at either end and were changing color, and the entire object was surrounded by a gray mist. Again, with the gray mist.
Mm-hmm.
Reminds me of the gray mist that's often described from early accounts at Skinwalker Ranch.
Yeah, yeah.
So the witnesses heard a sound they described as being like a tide coming in and out. Do you want to mimic that for me?
Tide. Tide. No. Tide, no.
There you go. It's like the 1940s here, folks.
Yeah, I am the Foley artist.
Yeah. Can you go ahead and send some money to buy me a coffee so we can afford a real sound machine?
Yes, please, God.
So object came quite close. Their car's engine stopped and the headlights dimmed. After 5 minutes, the object flew off and the car could be restarted. Both of the witnesses came down with headaches shortly after the sighting. Do you know what really strikes me as really interesting around all these early sightings is the automobiles have engine failure.
Well, and you know that Hynek, that's what he was obsessed with.
Yeah.
Like the automobiles dying, that was like the number one thing that kind of turned him into a believer, from a skeptic to a believer. Yeah. And he was massively obsessed with figuring out why cars would stall.
Well, and so for me, I have new sightings, because there are new sightings that still happen daily.
But yeah, you don't hear about the car.
And our cars are much more electrical now.
Oh, far more. So like that takes out EMP out of the picture.
Right.
You know, unless it's a different set of aliens.
True.
You know, but yeah, totally.
But you know, the technology that would stop a internal combustion engine from firing. I mean, it's spark, air, and fuel.
Yeah. Teslas would have been screwed back then.
Right. You can't say that name. We're going to get sued.
Sorry. Teslas would have been boned back then.
Now Sue can't come after us.
Nope.
Let's see. March 13th, 1977, in Pembrokeshire, Wales, 9 p.m.
All these places hobbits live. I'm just saying.
They probably do. And there's at least one troll market entrance.
Oh, for sure.
9 p.m., Stephen Taylor, age 17.
Thought it was almost Stephen Tyler from Aerosmith for a second there.
No, you know, Stephen Taylor probably still around and kicking. You may want to track him down for me. And
yeah. Hey, John.
Yeah.
In the UK, can you track down this guy?
I'm sure you know him. Everybody knows
Everybody knows everybody in the UK.
Was walking home from a visit to his girlfriend's house when he saw an orange, luminous, pear-shaped UFO in the sky. Pear shape also reminds me of the acorn. The
oh yeah,
where is that at? It's in West Virginia, isn't it?
They just had a huge.
No, it's like Pennsylvania or something.
But, yeah, they just had a huge conference. Yeah, oh my God, we should know this. I apologize for our knowledge base. We should know this.
I've seen the
Cat starts with a K. It's not Kendrick. The Keck.
It's not Kentucky.
No.
Let's see here. Acorn.
Yep. Sorry, folks. We have to look this up.
It's going to bug us if we don't.
It's got a K in there.
It's Kecksburg, Pennsylvania.
Kecksburg.
I knew it was in Pennsylvania.
I knew it was a K. I told you. We were
like 35% there. So. Yep. Anyways, so the pear like UFO, he walked to a friend's house to tell him, but he was not believed. I mean, you know,
as such.
Yeah. About a half mile further on, he noticed that he could not see the lights of farmhouses to his right. Looking closer, he saw that they were obscured by a large dome shaped object, dark in appearance, about 30 to 40 feet in diameter and 40 feet high, that was resting in the adjacent field. Around its underside, there was a dim glow of light. As he watched, he heard footsteps, and looking around, only a few yards away was a figure, and this is in quotes, like a skinny human 6 foot tall.
Slender man.
The being looked like an old man with high cheekbones and had large round eyes resembling those of a fish.
That's Slender Man, dude. It's the OG Slender Man before Reddit.
It said over its mouth was a box-like device with a tube leading over the shoulder. It was wearing a one-piece suit that looked semi-transparent. Taylor took a swing at the figure.
Good man. Man, I want to talk to him.
And ran for home. On arrival, he found his dog acted strangely towards him.
Get him and the Stardust Ranch guy to talk about.
Said his dog was snarling and barking and had to be put outdoors. The dog behaved normally the next day.
I mean, that in a lot of ways sounds like a classic tall gray or a tall white.
Tall white.
Yeah.
There was something. The message around the box, like a breathing apparatus, mm-hmm. like, it's something else that I've heard common in some of those earlier day, you know, kind of encounters.
Mm-hmm.
This is 1977.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where he got it. He had an encounter of his own. He's like, I got to work that in.
I got to work in Star Wars.
April 7th, 1977, Milford Haven, Pembrokeshire, Wales. Mr. Cyril John, age 64, a former local political leader, was up early for an early start to London when he noticed a light shining in his bedroom window. Looking out, he observed two objects. The first was a silvery gray egg-shaped object with a bright orange red light on top of it. It was about 4 feet across and was rocking gently in the air about 60 meters away. The second was a 7 to 8 foot tall humanoid figure who floated in the air with arms out and legs bent back like a free fall parachute.
Man, that's Slender Man, Mothman hybrid.
There was only about 35 feet between the man and the observer. That's really close.
Yeah, that's creepy too.
No features could be seen on the figure's face, and it wore a uniformly silver gray boiler suit. It remained motionless in the air for more than 25 minutes.
Jeez, man, Slender Moth is creepy, dude.
You know what? If I had a time machine, I would just go back to all these places.
I would too. Witness.
Yeah. Anyways, I wouldn't interfere. I would just like sit in a car.
I mean, everybody else would go back and kill Hitler, but you would go.
Well, butterfly effect.
Yeah.
You know, you can't change anything. I just want to sit in this guy's head.
No, see, that's why you don't go back in time. You just use the Vatican's chronovision or whatever it was. That way you're not interfering in time. There. You can just watch it.
Although to be able to visualize time, some aspect of you has to be there.
That's true.
Anyways, we're getting deep.
That's also what she said.
Then both the being and the void object began to slowly move off, gradually disappearing from view in the distance. April 19th. So we're still in April. The Anfield Haunting happened in August. We have a ways to go.
Yep.
Little Haven, Pembrokeshire, Wales. Again in Pembrokeshire. The radio of hotel owner Rosa Grimville suddenly went dead. Give me a radio going dead sound. There you go. Moments later, he heard a loud humming noise outside. And looking out, she was dazzled by a huge moon lighting up the area, moving about like a seesaw. It descended and landed in a field 100 yards behind the hotel. It was round, with flames coming off the top of the dome. There was a light on it like a pulsating star.
One thing I like so far is the diversity of these crafts.
Yeah.
Like, you know, everybody's always like, oh, people just saw flying saucers back in the day. But like, if you really go back and look, really weren't a lot of disc-shaped sightings. They were a lot of oddly shaped sightings, cigar-shaped, egg-shaped, acorn-shaped, you know, stuff like that.
I mean, I think it's interesting that, like, the Roswell crash is always depicted as being disc-shaped, but nobody really ever saw the crafts. I mean, it could have been... It could have been an acorn shaped. It could have been egg shaped. Who knows? So
who knows? Could have been broccoli shaped.
Could have been. You know, poached or egg. I don't know.
Anyways.
So there two creatures, 8 or 9 feet tall, emerged from the dome through the.
They're getting taller. You notice that
through the flames. I also wonder if you're shorter. Do you exaggerate? Do you over exaggerate?
Do you think people are taller
than what they are?
I don't know. I'm 6'5", so I couldn't tell you. But I mean, I exaggerate shortness.
Like
I definitely do.
From like 100, like I wonder if like if you and I stood next to each other 100 yards away and asked 10 people to write down how tall they think we were, I wonder what the result would be.
It's an experiment that needs to happen.
Yeah.
So buy us a coffee so we can go to England and measure people.
This experiment has to be done in England. Cannot be done anywhere else.
And I just want to measure people. That's it.
I'm sure Discovery would pay for that.
Yes.
through the flame, they've emerged through the flames. They wore cream and silvery colored jumpsuits. She could see no facial features nor any hair on these creatures, even though she tried to discern what they looked like through a pair of binoculars. Mm. Also, a lot of people in this town had binoculars.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't have any binoculars.
Well, because you don't need them now. You got to zoom on your phone. people are ornithologists, man. Like you needed. I mean, I grew up. We had a pair of binoculars in the house.
Well, my dad had a pair. We never got to use them.
Oh, well, your dad had fancy ones. We just had old rigs that you would, you know, if you're out on a boat or something like that.
They looked as though they had hands, but she saw no fingers.
Ew, just nubs.
They had mittens on. They were kittens and mittens.
Kittens and mittens.
I thought their feet were webbed. The figures walked around near the object for about 15 minutes. Miss Grimville wanted to scream, but she had lost her voice. She went in search of another witness, and when they returned, the UFO and humanoid figures had gone. Burn marks were found on the ground at the site the next day. All right. April 20th, 1977, in Herbrantston, Pembrokeshire, Wales. Mark Marston, age 11, so he's probably still around kicking, was looking for bird's nest.
See? Ornithologist.
In a hedge when a red glow appeared in the sky 50 yards away. A few moments later, a figure appeared and drifted through a closed gate at the other end of the field.
Now, that's something we don't hear very often, but, I mean, heck, last episode we were talking to Earl Grey Anderson, and he was talking about that same thing.
Yeah.
You know, the figures phasing through.
Right. Well, and phasing through is like right through things. But like this is almost like a hover. Like he lifted himself up off the ground, and just kind of hovered. It reminds me what I'm thinking of in mind is in the movie Dark City, where dude just kind of like just lifts up and just like you know, goes up the stairs or whatever. So anyways, if you haven't seen Dark City, watch it. I think this is like a
good movie.
Second reference to it.
It is.
So 50 yards away, a few minutes later, the figure appeared dressed in a silver suit like a diver with a large helmet and a square featureless face. It approached Mark rapidly, who turned and fled for home screaming.
Good man. Good man.
Like, I, you know, Macaulay Culkin could have played him made for TV remake. So May 3rd, 1977. We're into May now.
All right. My birthday month.
Hainault Forest, Essex, 3:55 a.m. Police took an emergency telephone call. The caller said that some strange object was over the forest near the small lake. Two policemen were directed to the scene. Arriving, they proceeded along the lake road and noticed a large, bright red light across on the eastern shore. They stopped, exited their vehicle, and observed a bell tent-shaped thing about 300 yards distance. This object continuously pulsated from dull to very bright red for the next 2 to 3 minutes. The UFO seemed to be hovering silently. Then, as they watched apprehensively, the object appeared to dissolve on the spot. As the thing was no longer visible, the officers decided, somewhat reluctant, to go across the lake and investigate the spot. As they were doing this, one of them looked up and briefly saw a shape of a thin, large, white crescent hanging in the sky. This apparition also dissolved on the spot. Reaching the location of Ground Zero, as best they could tell, they found nothing at all except a strong smell of burning. No cause could be determined. A report was immediately made to the local UFO investigator, the Essex Hotline, and the investigator, Barry King, came out the next day.
Dang, they moved quick.
I mean, they, you know, the England is a little more efficient.
I was like, I feel like MUFON still takes like a month.
Yeah, you know, they don't have a lot of field investigators.
Yeah, I know.
They get a lot of reportings. So, in daylight, one large bush was found to have damage, flattened in the center and slightly burned. A gorse bush, which don't know what that is, must be local, appeared to have had a very heavy weight set to its top center, the result of which was to break almost all the limbs, including snapping off the central branch. The pattern of breakage was to displace the branches into an outwardly radiating splay. No radiation nor magnetic anomalies were found.
I like that one. It's got a lot of research done on it. That's really good.
Somehow I got this mixed up. So this is, I'm going back in time real quick. So April 23rd, 1977, Ripperston Farm. If you remember, that's Peterson. Never mind. So the Ripperston Farm, a 7-foot tall silver clad entity was seen by Billy and Susan Combs from the window of their farm. The family were plagued by other UFO related experiences around this time.
Man, if they weren't so skinny, I'd be like, is Sasquatch wearing a uniform? But Sasquatch are thick. THICC.
Yeah. So May 17th. Lothian, Scotland. There we go. I did pull it in Scotland. 9 p.m. in Trenet and 7 surrounding towns in Lothian. A domed disc-shaped object and other objects were seen in the skies on a clear evening. One of the witnesses was a 13-year-old boy named Mackenzie. The UFOs generally flew off to the east. The sightings lasted at least 20 minutes. Skipping ahead now to June 6th, Yorkshire, UK. Object over vehicles, felt heat, mass displacement. June 21st, somewhere between Salford and Bury, England. On this day, a 10-meter-long silver cigar-shaped object followed two people riding on a motorcycle between Salford and Bury. It replicated all of their turns and was completely silent. It finally flew off behind a house. August 3rd, 1977.
So now we're getting
close.
We're getting close.
August 3rd. So Thaxt, Essex. A 24-year-old man named Stevens was driving when his car lost power from 50 miles per hour to 35 miles per hour despite applying full throttle. Two orange-red oval lights were seen hovering nearby at the time of distance of about 300 to 400 yards. So in August, we don't know a specific what date in August, but in August 1977, the Enfield haunting poltergeist begins.
Yeah, it begins. It is not a one-day thing. No. So.
Although I think the bulk of the activity was over like maybe a couple months after it started.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of fizzled out after that. So August 9th, 1977, Stonebridge Avenue in Kingston. England officer Officer Swift was on a patrol near when he noticed what looked like a thick cloud or fog that was moving across a nearby field. Thinking it might be smoke from a fire, he went to investigate and saw through the mist three smallish figures dancing about in a circle. Upon getting closer, he saw that there were two women wearing bonnets and shawls in white-colored dresses and a man in a sleeveless jerkin and tight-fitting trousers. The clothes looked very old-fashioned, and it was quite a bizarre scene as they threw their hands up and danced about. Then after a few moments, they simply disappeared right in front of us.
Oh, man. Because immediately you're like, is this like some old school pagan activity?
Right.
You know, the circle is open. You know, they're jamming, dude.
Yeah.
And then they gone. Or is this, you know, something else?
So I found this when looking for fairy encounters. This was listed underneath fairies or pixies.
I was going to say, I wonder, you know, we always think fairies are these tiny little creatures, yeah. But, you know, a lot of lore does not suggest that they were always really tiny. Yeah. So,
August 15th, 1977, the Ohio State University Radio Observatory, working on the SETI project, which is Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, receives a strong narrowband radio signal from deep space. The event is named the WOW signal for a notation made by researcher Jerry Emmon.
Jerry, did you hear that? Listen. Wow.
I heard it, man. I heard it. The WOW signal was a strong narrowband radio signal detected on August 15th, 1977. Let's see. The signal appeared to come from the direction of the constellation Sagittarius and bore the expected hallmarks of extraterrestrial origin.
Hmm.
He was so impressed by the result that he circled on the computer printout reading what it was and then wrote WOW beside it, thus it earning the WOW signal. The entire signal sequence lasted for the full 72-second window during which the Big Ear, which was the name of the telescope at Ohio State, was able to observe it, but has not been detected since.
Wow.
Yeah. So many hypotheses have been advanced on the origin of the emission. One of the things I really was thought about there is, you know, maybe the poltergeist beamed down.
Well, like Howard the Duck. Like, yeah. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
All right. But yeah, I mean, you have always speculated that, you know, what if ghosts aren't poltergeists, but are in fact an alien with cloaking technology,
yeah,
camouflage.
Well, and when I will do for the YouTube folks, for the folks that go out and listen to this episode on YouTube, when I talk through each one of these sightings, I'll pop a marker on a Google Earth map. So that you all can see exactly where these things are, mm-hmm, and when they take place and where they take place. And a lot of these sightings around the August time period are starting to narrow in on the general area of where the poltergeist, Enfield haunting poltergeist, wow, actually took place. So it's almost like they were searching for the right, you know, environment
or, yeah,
you know, whatever, or for their experiment.
Where can we find some teenage girls that are going through crap at the time? Yeah. We need some energy here,
right? So next up, on August 28th in Windermere, Cumbria, England, an on-duty police officer in McKenzie observed two very bright horizontal lights in the vicinity of Langdale Pike. that moved towards him and grew brighter. He ruled out any type of aircraft. At the same time, John McMullen also spotted the UFO from his location whilst walking through Keswick with three other officers. He described the object as being a hang glider or diamond shaped. At midnight, so 0020 hours, James Throhier and John Fiswick also reported seeing the object from their position at the Fall Barrel Park caravan site on the shores of Lake Windermere.
Hmm.
Other unnamed officers were also present at the location and saw the object. So quite a few police officers saw this, you know, triangular or diamond-shaped object kind of moving around in the sky. And again, this is pretty close to where it all kind of, where the Enfield Haunt, you know, poltergeist started. Excuse me. As the object approached them, he pulled the car over to have a better look. Despite their efforts, they could not make out a distinct shape of the object. All they could make out was two extremely bright lights attached to it, and there was a faint purring noise.
Okay, you guys can wake up now.
Yeah. Also sounds like a Model T associated with it. Later, about 5 minutes later, a colleague spotted the object heading in the direction of Buttermere.
Blimey! There it is!
It was traveling at a low altitude over the surrounding fields. At around the same time, another officer, David Wild, spotted the UFO while on foot patrol. Ray Rig Road at Bonus. He described it as a kite-shaped and that it was a very large structured craft. 5 minutes after that, a number of civilian witnesses also spotted the object. At the same time, following a police radio request for officer sightings, two further officers, Merkel and Jones, also could be a law firm, observed the same UFO from their position at Skelwith Bridge. They described the object as being kite-shaped as they watched it go out to sea over Morecambe Bay. So, 17 officers in all.
Wow, that's crazy. Yet we don't have, you know, legit people that see these things.
Right. 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 So, some a little, like, less specific dates. So, fall of 97...
77.
Sorry, 77. Thank you. At 5:20 p.m., the policewoman noticed a curious silent object estimated to be as large as 4-inch plate held at arm's length at no more than 300 feet wide. A conventional plane was immediately ruled out by the witness, who had been fully trained in aircraft recognition in the Royal Observer Corps. She felt no fear and on impulse waved at the object, which then came closer. Hmm. It seemed to be of a light greenish gray metal with a moderately reflective surface. On top of the dome protruded a blue green light, and underneath the object could be seen a very dense black circular section. At its closest approach, the object was estimated to be no further than 50 feet away.
Wow.
Late October 1977, Salisbury Plain, Wiltshire, England. A uniform officer observed a UFO at an altitude of only 500 to 700 feet above the plane. He described it as being oblong with a rounded top and a flat bottom. The object was seen to travel at very slow speed across the landscape. It was seen by only one officer.
He said, "Flat bottom girls, you make the rockin' world go round."
November 26, 1977. This one I found very interesting. And I have never heard of this ever before, but after finding it, it, like, for weeks after, it popped up in all of my, like, social feeds and everything. Yeah. November 26, 1977. A radio broadcast from space from Vrilon of the Ashtar Galactic Command.
Oh, Ashtar. I know Ashtar. And yeah, I know this.
So just after 5 p.m. on November 26, 1977, unsuspecting viewers in England who tuned in to the nightly news experienced a Southern television broadcast interruption by a voice from space. To this day, no one knows for certain who was behind the interruption.
There are so many channelers, psychics that are out there that claim to channel Ashtar. Like,
so there, you can go in and Google it, which I did, and you can find supposed recordings of it. But I don't think anybody actually got a recording of it in 1977, and they're really just trying to recreate what was said. Somebody wrote down at one point in time what they think the message was, and then people have just recreated these audio recordings over the years.
Gotcha.
There is apparently around this time, there was a threat made to the broadcasting station, something about what's it called when you suppress people from speaking, or I can't think of what it's called.
The freedom of speech?
Well, but it's suppression of that. Yeah. So anyways, that broadcast station had got something about not letting people, not getting the word out about something that was going on. And somebody thinks that basically someone hacked the feed. And
You talk about a whole episode we could do is on interrupted broadcasts. Like, there's some crazy stuff that's out there, stories and then actual recordings and things like that. Some of them are really spooky.
So just a couple of so that's all my detailed report. Here's a couple of summarizations. So from January 1977 until August 1977, there are 12 UFO sightings with 4 humanoid sightings.
Right.
From August 1977, somewhere around the start of the Enfield haunting, until December 1977, there were 3 UFO sightings.
Interesting. And these are just what's reported.
Right. But I mean, it really does seem like, you know, if you were looking at it as like a, they're looking for something.
They found it.
They found it. And so then the sightings after that are like, you know, reports on how progress is going. You know,
yeah.
Are you able to terrorize this family? Yes. We opened several doors.
Mark calling arson.
We were able to levitate the bed. Jerry hurt his back. So,
yeah, it's interesting. Continue on it before I ask my question.
No, that's all. So I will say, though, but I didn't write this down, but I do remember it from doing the research. Almost all of the sightings that returned to Wales are let me rephrase this. Almost all of the, like, there would be sightings in Wales and there would be sightings inland, and then there would be sightings in Wales and then sightings. It's almost like they were returning back.
Mm-hmm.
And Wales is, you know, Wales as a section is almost all coastline.
Right.
And there is a rather large power plant in Wales.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were going to return into the sea or to, you know, charge up or whatever the case may be. So,
yep. And we had a ferry sighting.
Yep.
It's tough because Sasquatch Bigfoot type sightings weren't as recorded back then.
And they're not really, I mean, even today, there's just not a lot of Sasquatch recordings in the UK. Like, to our you know, UK listeners, what are your cryptids, right? Because maybe
it's like Hearn the Hunter.
Maybe you call them other things instead of Sasquatch or Bigfoot.
Yeah, but Nessie.
Do
you call a Sasquatch something else?
Right. You know, do you call it Hairy Man of the Woods?
Right.
Because if so, then we need to look for Hairy
We
Man
read
of
that
Woods,
one years ago. It was a Spooky News article about a huge sighting in England that we had read about, a Bigfoot sighting. It was a long time ago, though.
But. Yeah, but, you know, and it may have been pre-77 or post-77.
It was post. It was recent.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, are there other sightings of that kind of stuff? What I have a feeling that they are probably called by more localized terminology.
Sure, like the Lincolnshire Man, you know,
or something.
Or the Lincolnshire Phantom.
Right, I mean, with the Hounds of Baskerville,
Right.
Would we call them dogmen?
Right. You know? Would we call them dogmen? So, yeah, any UK listeners that are out there, let us know if you guys, what are your localized cryptids, monsters, sightings, things like that around where you're at. Also, if you know of any other sightings that we missed that fit within this convergence, a UFO sighting, a cryptid sighting, some sort of magical working, anything like that,
any
some
other
sort of crazy mass bird extinction, anything that happened, let us know. I mean, we are collecting these you know, for a future project, and so we would love to add to this research. So just because we've shared this with you today doesn't mean we're done looking at Enfield and the surrounding time.
You know, from a worldwide perspective, we the U.S. detonated, as well as Russia detonated, quite a few nuclear bombs around you know, in the year of 1977. And I reached out to our good friend Mr. Alan Greenfield to see if he was aware of any significant major, you know, magical workings that may have happened around this time. And he said, you know, he said there probably was that, that, you know, because they happen all the time and people don't.
Well, and like I had told you earlier, '70s was a big ramp up of magic working, Church of Satan, things like that, which all led to the satanic panic of the 80s. But there was a lot of black magic occult stuff going on at the time.
He did share, though, that he did one of his larger, one of his largest rituals was in fall of 1977.
So. Interesting.
So, yeah.
So I had two questions, because one, we know that we looked into the year before and the year after, and there was nowhere near as many sightings of things as it was that year.
Right.
Huge UFO flap and humanoid flap. But the other thing that I was asking about is, had you looked into ley lines and how those correspond with these areas?
I did. And so, in fact, when, for those who watch the YouTube version, you'll see the Google Maps when I actually have ley lines overlaid. And so you'll see in respect to ley lines where these sightings are. And so that's one of the correlations I look for, because I have a, you know, a theory we've talked about before that ley lines serve as some sort of like a superhighway for these craft to travel on, or maybe even navigate by, right? Is instead of using a compass, because our poles tend to shift, maybe ley lines are more static.
Right.
And so there are ley lines near or that cross through a lot of the different areas. And I did a lot of research into kind of ley lines and how far. So when you see a line, a ley line on a map, the general acceptance that I've been able to find across other researchers and people who've looked into ley lines is that 30 miles on either side, or, you know, I guess, you know, radius around a ley line is affected by the ley line. And so when you look at that and you look at a lot of these different sightings and occurrences, they're well within the scope of, you know, being affected or related to a ley line.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the most popular ley lines obviously goes directly through Stonehenge.
Right. Of course.
So, I mean, you know that, and in fact, there's actually quite a few ley line convergences, for lack of a different term, that happen in and around England, in Europe in general.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
So that's what I've collected so far on what we'll call the Enfield convergence. But like you say, we'll continue to look for new things. I think in having that more colloquial, you know, appropriate terminology for what people call things in the UK, you know, for me as a, as an American, I didn't know or think to look for specific things other than fairies and pixies, you know, those right. I know come from that area. But if there are other things that you all call or name or have seen, you know, like we have, you know, all kinds of the Loveland frog, which is named because it was seen near Loveland, Ohio.
Yeah.
Right. So
clawed beast of the Ohio, because it was in the Ohio. Right.
So I would imagine there are probably similar type things in the UK.
Kentucky goblins. That's a really big one. I would have never called aliens Kentucky goblins.
Right. So I'm sure that there are entities or sightings.
Well, not only that. Yeah. Like, what else was there? Was there any, you know, one thing, you know, we'll continue our research is looking, were there possessions that happened at the time? Was there exorcisms? Were there other hauntings that made the news or just were generally happening around that time, but Enfield got all the press?
I mean, I'm going to tell you that it's when you're Googling, like if you Google ghost haunting England 1977, the first three pages are all infilled.
Yeah.
So it's really hard. Like you say, it's gotten all the press, and especially that there was a movie.
Right. And it's not like we can look up, you know, British newspapers in the microfiche because we're not there. So,
right. I mean, so yeah, anybody that is over there that, you know, has the time or has the resources or just has the knowledge, or wants to point us to a book, maybe there's some collective book that somebody put together.
Even an out of print book. I mean, we'll find it on Thrift Book or Abe's Books or eBay.
Like I've got that book from that bishop guy from the 1600s. I haven't looked through yet. It's all about like, talking about fairies and lore and stuff of the 1600s and so on. So obviously that wasn't 1977. It might be 1677, but, but you know, one of the things that, you know, we hope to be able to get to is by gathering all this data around all these kind of convergences, you know, ultimate goal for me, and we've talked about it, is to be able to gather enough information, enough data to be able to predict where a convergence may happen. And so I don't care if you got newspaper clippings from 1957 where this thing happened again in the, you know, England, UK, infield area, send those to us, because that bolsters a convergence for 1957.
And right. It could be a 20-year enigma.
20. Yeah. Right. You know, or some other type of situation that happens. So, yeah, I mean, give me all the data. I want all the data.
Right. And not only predicting it, but finding out, like we've always said, why is it all converging? Yeah. How is it all connected? What does it all mean? Yeah.
But I mean, you know, think about it. We go out and investigate things after they've happened. Mm-hmm. Imagine if you could assemble a team of scientists and say, hey, something's going to happen in this place within the next 3 days, and have everybody standing by ready to record it. I mean, imagine what kind of breakthroughs we would make. So
it's fascinating, man. And it does. It makes you want to go, because I mean, UFOs were a hot topic back then. You know, I'd love to see what kind of books that were out there. I would love to find that information, because, you know, we don't get as many books from England out here. It's not as easy for us to find.
So bottom line, I know we're doing well in the charts in Sweden, in Germany, in Hong Kong, in a lot of the other European countries. So I'll ask all of you.
Hong Kong. I mean, that European country.
Oh, I mean, other.
European. I know what you mean. I'm just giving you a heck.
But I'll ask everyone who's a listener, if you have sighting details or, you know, anything like that, please pass it along to us. I am forming a database. My wife's going to help me manage it. And I'm going to collect and store all this data to try to come up with, you know, patterns or sequences that will really help us kind of further the science of these convergences. So again, our email address, if you want to send us any of this stuff, is contact@theconvergenceenigma.com. Or you can also go to our website, theconvergenceenigma.com. And click on report a sighting, and you can also fill that out, and that comes to us as well. So, I would appreciate anything that anybody has to offer.
Right, which includes support. If you guys want to support us to help us with our research, to help us get access to things that we don't have access to because of money or things like that, there's multiple ways to do so. But one of the biggest ways is just simply going to our web store. Going to theconvergenceenigma.com/store. There you can get t-shirts, stickers, all kinds of stuff. And they do ship to Europe and Hong Kong, my favorite European country. You know, that's the best and easiest way to support us.
Yep. And you all support us enough by listening, but I really, you know, we've got a brand new t-shirt design out in the store. Stefan put together based on an idea that we had coming back from the MUFON symposium that really, I think, depicts the convergence enigma and all that we're trying to say that it is. And so, you know, jump out there and grab you a shirt. We really appreciate it.
Yep.
So,
show your support.
Yeah. Wear it, take a picture, post it on social media.
Oh yeah, dude, we definitely love that, man. And tag us. We love being tagged. You're it.
In the last 2 minutes of our show, I wanted to say that, we haven't done Creepy Ketchup in a while, and I'm not doing an official segment here, But I think both of us have had quite a bit of activity happening.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of shadow people and such in my house. You've had some stuff happen.
Yeah. So if you're missing Creepy Ketchup and stuff like that, pay attention, because Astral Stew, our other YouTube offering and podcast that we do with Santosh David, we're going to be doing some Creepy Ketchup on there. And some stuff like that. So make sure to tune into Astral Stew. I don't know when our next episode's coming out, because it's been a crazy couple of months.
Yeah.
But probably soon. So, but be on the lookout for that. Creepy Ketchup is coming back on Astral Stew. But other than that, we love you guys. Thank you guys for everything that you do. We couldn't do this without you. But we're going to go ahead and get out of here unless you got anything else to say. I like that you baited them with a little shadow people action to get them over to Astral Stew, which, of course, you know, you guys can just go to our YouTube page, youtube.com/fearscapemedia, and find the playlist for Astral Stew. It's a lot of fun, and it is not PG-13. It is rated R, and it is very adult, but it's a lot of fun for us, and Santosh is an absolute blast, and he's just so smart. But thank you guys so much for tuning in to the Convergence Enigma with Josh and Stefan. This has been Stefan with a reminder to keep your eyes to the skies.
And this has been Josh. The truth is now.
And remember, folks, keep questioning, keep searching. Good night, everybody.
Good night.